Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, your home for all things Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and so much more. Join Derek and Ian as they tell tales to astonish along this journey into mystery. Grab some snacks and settle in because Paperweight Entertainment starts now. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Derek Hoskins, and tonight we are talking about She-Hulk, episode number 2. With me, as always, is my good friend and yours, Mr. Ian Torrance. Ian, fresh off a nap, you ready to talk about She-Hulk?
I'm still getting my bearings, Derek. No, the answer is no, I'm not ready.
Well, maybe you'll wake up a little more as we introduce our guest for this evening from the Caption Life podcast, returning the wonderful Mr. Sean Winningham. Sean, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Better now that you're here, pal.
Oh, that's sweet of you.
It's truthful. All right. Ian, that was all the time you got. You ready to go?
I'm this cord. I don't know what it goes to.
All right.
Sitting underneath me.
Well, Ian does in the middle, tech support.
Ian just goes off camera. is that what that plug does?
Where'd that go?
that was for It's actually just been keeping me charged the whole time.
You see him outside just climbing on a telephone pole, following the wire.
Hell! Where's it go? I honest to God don't think I've ever seen this before.
This is going to me the whole episode. Like, what does it mean? What is it? Every now and again, you're just
like
that.
It's like the episode from New Girl. What's in the bag? It's a hand, isn't it? It is. God, what does it mean? Sorry, anyway. I don't mean to like interrupt your chi. I stepped on it and I looked down. I was like, the hell is
it's
that?
It's all right. If anybody's listening or watching at this point, this is not new. This is just the vibe of the show. We've been at this for a year and a half, and this is just what we do. But we will go ahead and get into the show. This will be a full spoiler review, so if you've not seen She-Hulk, please make sure that you dip out now. Come back and listen to our review, watch our review. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and ring the notification bell. And there went Ian. He found his cord got unplugged. But that's all right. We'll keep going.
Now, yeah, the joke was if you haven't watched She-Hulk, get off here and go. And I was like, oh.
I ruined the joke, as usual.
That's okay. I'm too tired to tell.
That's all right. Well, I'll let you get started then, Ian.
Okay.
What did you think about the second episode? I know you didn't love the first episode, but you liked it.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it. I just, for those of you that, I don't know what I'm talking about right now. I'm so tired. I'm not going to make it tonight.
Yeah, you'll do it.
In general. Yeah, you'll do it. All right, so anyway, I did enjoy this one a little bit more than I enjoyed the first one. I did not hate the first one. Didn't hate it. I just thought the pacing was weird, as you know. I thought the story just seemed a little forced, and it was 25 minutes of let's cram this origin story in right now, and then we're going to have a 2-minute action scene at the end that's going to set up the next episode, and then it does, and then I don't feel like they ever like really explain just what in the hell was happening in that courtroom, why she busted in like that. But I'm just like, I guess it doesn't matter. Okay, moving on. Abomination.
I think that's going to come back up, in all honesty. They did mention real quick at the beginning of the episode that she was a superhero influencer, which I think is a very funny title.
It's a weird terminology. Yeah, that's a weird terminology. I do notice that in all of these MCU shows / movies that they have a habit of like laying these breadcrumbs, and there'll be like a breadcrumb in like Iron Man, the first Iron Man from like what 2008, and then like in Infinity War, it'll pop back up. It's like, whoa, you really let that sit in, didn't you? Like, you've been building that up for a while.
Like, that's for the people that have been there from the beginning. Just a little Easter egg for you. This one, there are so many Easter eggs in this episode, but we'll get to those later. We'll get to those later. Sean, what'd you think about this episode overall?
I thought it was really good. It was definitely short, you know. Yep. Like I felt that in this episode, and you know, they said that with this series, even though it's going to be 9 episodes, it's definitely shorter than all the other shows that they've had per episode as well. So I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, it's over already. Like I was expecting more to happen with all that. I think for me, it's really evident that this show is going to not only serve the purpose of introducing Jennifer Walters and She-Hulk into the MCU and kind of setting up future projects and storylines, but it seems like it's also the show where they're going to answer a lot of like lingering questions in the MCU. Cause we saw that in the first episode and we definitely saw it here as well too. So I think it's, I wouldn't be surprised if every episode we get a question that people have been asking about that gets answered here. So I'm really curious to see how far they go with that in terms of, can they have She-Hulk answer this question and that question, even though she may not have been involved with it at all whatsoever. So I think it'd be really interesting, but I thought it was good. The only odd part, which I accepted the fact that's probably just for, you know, timing and story convenience, is the fact that she got fired at a bar. Like,
yeah, I thought that was weird too. What a weird way. And she's a district attorney. That's a little odd to get fired at a bar. At least let her come into the office on Monday and talk to her then.
I know that was good. Thank God you're here.
Now that you're good,
I'll get a vodka and cranberry. And oh, by the way, you're fired.
Yeah, yeah. But and again, I think it's just because they wanted to show how she kind of became a popular celebrity overnight, but had to like cram that stuff in. And so that part was just the odd thing. But again, I think it's just, they were trying to make it work within a short amount of time as well.
You did the right thing. Just not for this firm.
Right. And because of this one case, you're fired.
I thought that was a little silly. I understood what they were doing and why they did it that way, but I mean, she won the case and she saved the entire jury. I understand completely from the opposing, you know, sides counsel why they would call for a mistrial. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
But wouldn't you expect a civil servant, like a district attorney, to do everything in their power to protect the citizens of the city that they represent? So I think that's a little silly, but I do, again, that's a weird place to be in where now, you know, she becomes a spectacle. And I think that one thing that came out of that I loved about the show, spoilers for anybody that was surprised, I loved this episode. The only thing I had against it is that it was too short. But it didn't feel too short. I was just sad when it was over. I wanted more. I thought the pacing was perfect in it. But one thing that they did really, really well was each time she got fired, the background changed, getting dingier and dingier and dingier, showing her progression of like, okay, the top firm. Okay, well, maybe my second choice. Okay, well, this sketchy place. All the way down to where it looked like she was actually applying at Nelson and Murdoch.
I think it was more
like with like cardboard boxes in the background.
I think that was more of a regression.
Yeah, it was just going down farther and farther and farther.
That was one of my gripes too, Sean, was the bar scene where he's just like, hey, I'm glad you're here. I need to talk to you. Could you shrink down? I don't want you to tear my fucking head off when I do this. Perfect. Perfect. Okay. Yeah. Wait, your metabolism's different? You're really drunk? That's better for me.
Yeah.
You know how you protected all of these people and saved my life and everybody around you? Yeah. No, that was great. However... hear me out. We lost what? How?
And they didn't lose. It was a mistrial. They didn't technically lose.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm like,
that wouldn't go in a loss.
And I don't understand like how that's her fault. Just like,
I know.
Wait, you're like a She-Hulk? Mistrial. I don't trust this woman. Like, I just don't understand how that affected her directly. Like, oh, you're making the firm look bad. She just saved everybody's life. Wouldn't you think that she's a celebrity now? Everybody knows her. Everybody wants a picture of She-Hulk. She's become this hero. And he's just like, you're making us look bad. You're fired. Wouldn't that make the firm look bad, firing her for that?
You would think. Considering the fact that all the other law firms around wouldn't hire her, I don't think it would have necessarily looked
that's
bad on
that. That's asinine to me, too. It's just like, oh, huh, you're too much of a risk for us.
Well,
why?
I think what they were actually trying to do, if I can play devil's advocate, I think what they were actually trying to do was point out that just like all of the people online have said, it was just because she was a woman. That's the only reason why. And they wanted to push a feminist agenda. I think that's what really was going on here, because it's the hashtag MCU. Just throwing that out. For anybody listening and not looking at my face right now, that's sarcasm. I'm just bad at it.
Yes.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I caught it because I've known you long enough.
Right. Sean looked really concerned for a second.
No. I've listened to you guys and know that, and I know you well enough to know that that was sarcasm.
Sean's probably noticed my head's getting closer to my shoulder over here.
Is he okay? Hits a mic, yeah.
Just pop back up.
One
She-Hulk.
Moving on from my terrible comedy. One of the criticisms that I saw the first episode was that they didn't lean heavily enough into the comedy that the show was supposed to be. I disagreed. I laughed out loud quite a bit. But I feel like they leaned more into the comedy in this, even having a little bit of a slapstick element when she shrunk back down and, you know, fell out of the stool. Sean, did the comedy work for you in this episode? And did you like it better than the first? Did you think that it was consistent? What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty consistent for me, at least, because I remember in the first episode, I thought there was enough comedic elements in there. I mean, you have to balance it out because it can't be, you know, joke after joke throughout the whole show and everything. I mean, even when you look at movies like Deadpool, that's a very comedic character. There's balance of moments of there are a lot of funny comments that he says, but there's also serious moments as well, too. Right. And I think the first episode did a really good job of that, of balancing that. And I think they did the same thing here as well, too, that there was a lot of funny moments, but then there's a lot of serious moments, especially when she was talking to Emil Blonsky. I mean, there were some jokes that she cracked, but then, you know, when it got to the serious parts and you can see her, you know, thinking maybe he did change and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought they did a good job of balancing the humor overall with the serious elements of it and everything. But I think it's still, you can come out of this and still say that it's a comedic loss show after these two episodes that it still hits it. So,
yeah, I think so too. And I think this episode was actually kind of the episode number one of the show. If I was to say, because the first episode, like Ian said, I can see how people could have been a little disappointed because they crammed the origin into one half hour episode. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if that didn't hit with you, I can see you thinking, oh, well, maybe the show isn't really going to be what I thought it was going to be. Whereas this one, it was like, okay, it definitely leaned into the comedy. We're getting more of the legal, you know, plot line, and we're actually moving forward into what the plot of the show is going to be with Abomination needing her representation for parole. Mm-hmm. And I think that this episode was really, really well done and a good measuring stick for what the show is going to be overall.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe better so than the first episode, even though I love the first episode.
I think comedy wise, I've told you in the first episode, it was a little too slapstick, a little too silly in your face, kind of like what they were doing with Thor, Love and Thunder. We've got no problem with the humor. There's no problem with the comedic aspects of these movies or shows. But if it starts to overshadow and overcrowd the element of the drama, the action, and everything, honestly, even if it did, I'd be okay with it because I like a good comedy, but you just can't be too silly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, my biggest gripe with Thor, Love, and Thunder was, even Ragnarok was a completely different tone for the first few movies, and that's okay. Because, like Sean said, there was an equal balance of seriousness and stuff like Deadpool. Love and Thunder comes in, and you just got this big meathead that's a bleach blonde surfer boy idiot, and he just does this comedy shtick the entire time, and it's just like, okay, like what's going on with this character? What are we doing here? And I kind of felt like we were trending toward that in the first episode with Bruce, who is a smart, sophisticated guy through most of the series, and when he's Hulk, he's very serious and brooding, and when he turns into what do they call him, just smart Hulk.
Yeah.
Even like with the first introduction of that, like he was very like, the tone was down, he was down to earth. Like I said, I've got no problem with smart Hulk cracking jokes and stuff, but like if it like the whole yoga and everything, it's just like, let's not do too much of what we're doing with the movies where it's kind of nosediving into that slapstick comedy. So for this one, for me, the comedy was better because it was more of a, I don't want to say dark comedy, black comedy, but the comedy was more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't silly, over the top comedy. It was like Abomination writing haikus.
Oh my gosh, Abomination was great.
Yeah,
but which was funny that Emil was making these jokes, but it was very subtle, I thought.
Yeah,
right.
Compared to, you know, being the goofy kind of comedy.
Right.
Yeah.
And, and when she talks to Bruce and Bruce says, you know what? The whole phone conversation with her and Bruce was really funny to me, the back and forth. Him just saying, yeah, well, you know,
just trying to get a word.
Everybody wants to be rehabilitated. She just kept talking over him. I thought that was good. And he's just like, yeah, he actually wrote me a really good poem.
Which do you guys want to see? I want to know what was in the haiku.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to know what was in
I'll tell you what I want to know. I want to know how the fuck Bruce Banner was getting service
in that spaceship. That's the best cell phone plan ever.
I'm going to talk to my boss tomorrow and see if we can put that on a Verizon advertisement. Like, this man is in space, nothing but bars.
Yeah. Well, that whole scene was just fantastic for a lot of reasons, because he made the joke about how he's not Edward Norton, right? Because he said, I'm literally a different person.
They called that out.
Yeah. But then with him being the Sakaaran spaceship and flying away, one, I think that means that we're not going to see him for the rest of the series.
I don't think so either.
Maybe for the last episode, but I don't think we're going to see him for the rest of the series. But I know a lot of people have been talking about, they think it's setting up for World War Hulk. And I think that scene probably confirms that's what they're going to be exploring at some point. And I think what's interesting is D23 coming up. I would not be surprised if they mention that they're doing that. So,
yeah.
Well, there's no reason not to believe she can't get a hold of him anywhere at this point, because that cell service is immaculate. Yes. What towers are you going off of?
Well, and also, you know, to that point, I think I mentioned it last week that there have been some rumblings that Universal and Disney have worked out some kind of a deal so that they can do another Hulk solo movie.
Right.
But even if they haven't, I think they can get around it enough if they have enough characters in a World War Hulk movie, because really, if in the World War Hulk comic, Hulk wasn't,
you can abbreviate WW1 if you need to.
Well, he wasn't really the main character of that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was W squared one.
Yes, absolutely. Because if, you know, for anybody that hasn't read that, it was really about the heroes of Earth trying to come up with a way to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
More than, I mean, Hulk was obviously a main part of that storyline, but
obviously.
But I think that they could possibly get away with it doing a Captain America like Civil War style crossover where he's a major player, but not necessarily a solo movie, and they may be able to get around it. Either way, I do agree. I think that they're setting that up somehow. The very fact that he's going back to Sakaar, everybody that's read those comics knows that that's the next logical step, since we've already seen, you know, the Gladiator Hulk. And now I really think we're going to see his son, because I think the fact that they mentioned in Ragnarok that time works differently there, that I think that he's going to have a son there that's older than 2 years old or 7 years old at this point, whatever it would be. But I do agree with you. I don't think that we're going to see him again in the show, other than maybe a scene at the very, very end.
Right.
Maybe
like
a tease.
He returns or something like that. Yeah.
So, Abomination. I want to say a couple of things real quick, and then we can talk about them more. I'm getting a little tired of people complaining about the change to Abomination. Like, I don't know if you've seen there's been a lot of discourse online about the change to Abomination's look and to his tone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe for a single second that Abomination is not a villain. I think that I'm going to go on record right now, and you guys can agree or disagree. We'll discuss. The seven soulmates are the Thunderbolts.
Mm.
I would be willing to bet money that the seven soulmates are either the Thunderbolts or, you know, the Masters of Evil or whatever super team that they're going to be a part of. And that this is all just a play to get out and to allow him to actually be a part of a team like that and not have it be a public outcry for having a war criminal basically being on a team of superheroes, because Thunderbolts is. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe for a second that that's what it is. But even if it is, him being 100% genuine, I'm all in for Tim Roth doing haikus and namaste. I love Tim Roth. I'm so excited that he's back in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what, Sean, what do you think? Do you think that, that Abomination is going to actually be reformed, or do you think that this is a play?
You know, that's a great question. And honestly, I will say that the vibe I got is that there's a bigger plan in play, and that there's more to the surface than what he's letting on, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, with that said, it could go in a lot of different directions. I just think that given the history and given everything else, there's just something that seems a little off with what he's doing. And it kind of gives off Mysterio vibes,
right?
In terms of, on the surface, it seems like everything's changed, but there's still something that's a little bit questionable with that. And I agree with you that there's something going on with the seven, you know, pen pals or whatever you call them. Because one, it's like a specific number, like who says a specific number, but there's definitely something going on with that. So I think that it could also be that there's more behind it than what we see now, that it gets revealed. But maybe still by the end of the series, you know, they have a revelation and he, you know, does turn into, you know, joining the good side, or at least being like an anti-villain at that point.
Right.
But I think it's going to be interesting. We're going to see more of that explanation because of the fact that Wong had taken him to do that underground fight that we saw the scene in Shang-Chi and all that. So it's really weird that, you know, he's involved with this, and maybe he's a Skrull or something like that. I don't know. Right. But it just seems really odd and interesting that that scene is in there, and how does this kind of connect? And obviously the show's going to explain that because that's where they left on the cliffhanger and everything. So they're going to have to explain that part. But think about it now. I don't think Abomination has really been brought up in any other movies outside of Shang-Chi. Like, I don't think Wong has mentioned it. So it very well could be that maybe Wong is a Skrull in that movie at that part. And maybe that's part of this whole thing as well too. Who knows? I mean, so I think it could go in a lot of different directions, but as of right now, I'm sitting that he's probably more on the villain side, and that this is a this is an act, because Jennifer Walters kind of called him on.
Yeah, she did. She was like, they're gonna respond a lot better to you if you're just honest with them.
Right. Exactly. So,
and his story makes sense. I mean, that, you know, if you go back and you watch Incredible Hulk, he was a fighter. He just wanted to be younger. He wanted to be stronger. He wanted to be a super soldier.
Right.
And, you know, that, but he also speech was
about how your government hired me to do this, and I thought I was the good guy the whole time. And then the guy that I'm sent to basically kill is now a superhero. And I'm in villain. Prison.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can see that he had a really legitimate argument for why he should have been there. I thought that was brilliant writing. I never, in all honesty, I've watched Incredible Hulk many times. I loved Incredible Hulk. I thought it was a really fun movie.
I didn't hate it, but I think the reason I liked it so much is because the first one was a heaping pile of gorilla shit.
No, that was just, that was the reference photos they used to make the 3D, like the Hulk from Ang Lee's Hulk. Just a massive pile of poop. Man, that was terrible. Anyway, if you like Ang Lee's Hulk, that's awesome, but I really did not care for it.
Nobody likes Ang Lee's Hulk. Ang Lee don't even like that.
Yeah, I know. But thinking about, you know, going back and actually remembering Incredible Hulk and seeing it from that perspective, I never even would have thought of it that way. Because, you know, he's the villain of the movie. You know he's going to be the villain from the beginning. They set him up as kind of a mustache-twirling villain. But now what they've done here... His name
is Abomination, though.
Right. Well, even his human name, I mean, Emil Blonsky. I mean, it sounds like a Cold War era villain.
And he is so, Russian-born.
He is Russian-born. And so it was really fun to see that flipped on its head, because it forces you to think, oh, you know what? That's a really good point. So I really appreciated that scene. And again, I want to hear some of his poetry.
I did like that she brought up, like, you did terrorize half of Brooklyn. So
yeah, like you destroyed a pretty good chunk of Harlem there.
Yeah.
Harlem, that's what it was.
But, but so has the Hulk with New York City and
and South Africa. It, Cape Town in South Africa? He destroyed all of that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they make good points. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that with the setup. I really enjoyed the family scene that they had. And for the love of all that's holy, was her dad the guy from Perfect Strangers? Was that him?
Yep.
As soon as I saw him, I was like, man,
when he walked up and I heard his voice, I was like, that's Larry fucking Appleton. And he turned around and I was like, yeah. And then I look around, I'm like, I don't know who I'm celebrating.
There's nobody here.
And I don't know why I'm happy about knowing that random fact.
What is that? I got really excited to see him in an MCU project, just to see him. I haven't seen him in anything in 30 years. I was so excited for him.
He's good been in a man. Few TV things, show, but like here and there.
Yeah, he's been in a few things, but it seems like it just kind of like he was great in Perfect Strangers. Yeah, it just seems like after that show, it just never, you know, picked up anything after that. Yeah. You know, so
well, you know, ever since then, he's been trying to just stand tall and wings of his dreams, and it just I've had that theme song stuck in my head since I was a child. Sorry.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the family dynamic. I didn't like the family as much as I like the family from Miss Marvel, mostly because it seemed like most of Jennifer's family are kind of douchebags.
Now, I wish when her dad asked Jennifer, like, hey, could you come help me with something in the garage? Mm-hmm. I wish she would have said, well, of course I can. Don't be ridiculous. I was a huge fan of that show.
Balky Bartakamoose.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
That would have been great. I really like that scene, though, of the two of them in the garage and him trying to genuinely ask how she's doing.
Yeah, I was just trying to get you out of there.
Yeah, I like that. That's a very dad thing to do, I feel like.
You got fired. You told us to bring it up.
I said, don't bring it up.
Don't bring it up.
Oh. Which, by the way, I got to say, that's hilarious because in the first episode, I will say that when Bruce said, well, except for, you know, Ched, like, I had thought they were being serious about him being genius, and clearly he is not genius in the family at all. So I find that very humorous that you were just like, oh, there's going to be like a third person who's like just as talented as them. Nope, not at all. Nope, not even close.
Nope, he's a moron. He's a complete moron.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
In that scene, I did pick up something that I thought was interesting was when the mom was talking about the person she knows from the coffee shop, which was Yusuf.
Yeah,
I remember I was like, I think I've heard that name before. So I looked it up, and that's actually, I don't know if this is in the show as well, too, but that's actually the first name of Kamala Khan's father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's who she's referring to, but I wonder if that was just like a nice little Easter egg that they kind of put in to just kind of make it loosely connect and all that. But it just seems odd.
I would
like,
say, because she said he was a young boy.
Right. Yeah. Too young for you. Yeah. So I know it's not him, but I mean,
it would be funny if it was, though.
Oh, right. My gosh. Yeah.
It still was him. Yeah. He's like 50 he's years old. Too,
yeah, he shows up in the Hulk costume.
Yeah, he's too young for you.
It's like, wow. So, but it's funny because, just like what you said, Derek, that family dynamic is something that I think everybody can really relate to because it's a lot of those family that is really, you know, caring of each other, but they say things that they don't realize, like the underlying cuts and punches that they're making to Jennifer when they say those things.
Yeah. You know?
Like when the mom said, like, oh, he's too young for you, like, like everybody would have picked up on that except for the person saying it. In this case, it's the mom. And mom sometimes can be, you know, a little bit naive in terms of what they're saying because they're trying to be genuine but don't realize how it comes across. So, yeah, I love that. And I think it was just like a 2-minute scene, so it wasn't very long, but they crammed a lot of great dynamics in there that I think was just really enjoyable and a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and the way that it was short like that, too, it was easy to make it an uncomfortable scene because Jen's clearly uncomfortable, and so you get everybody talking very fast, it's in and out, and then she gets rescued by her dad to just have a breath,
right?
And I think that was a really well written scene, and I don't like a single member of her family other than her dad. I don't like any of them other than Bruce. I like Bruce,
right,
but yeah, I also like that they worked. I'm really impressed at such a small runtime that they were actually able to work in a lot of relationship dynamics, because like her and Nikki had a little bit more time, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they have a really great chemistry, by the way, the actor, I can't remember the actress who plays her friend. But they're very believable as best friends. I really like mm-hmm. the fact that they're just sitting there next to each other on the couch while Jen's scrolling through terrible jobs, trying to come up with something. And, mm-hmm. Where we got a Wolverine reference, by the way, did anybody, yep. I did not, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm so impressive. I did not catch it. Granted, I watched it this morning, the first time on my phone. So I couldn't see everything, but yeah, so there was a, you know, a little news story. One, there was a news story of the celestial hand and head. So stop asking why they're not mentioning it. For the love of God, they did a whole news bulletin at the end of Eternals where they clearly mentioned it. And then now there's an article being written about it. So shut up. It's been referenced. I'm tired of the argument.
I think people are talking about the fact it's not referencing anything else other than it was internally in Eternals. And everything else they haven't really mentioned it in. But that little article was a real quick.
Right. Thing. But at least it was mentioned. So the argument can't be taken.
Shouldn't it have been a bigger topic, though, instead of like, oh, there's this hand. Yeah, who cares?
Like a major influencer making a TikTok video, like, look where I'm at.
I'm on the hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's just funny, like the things that we can get hung up on.
Yeah.
Because that was just something that's weird. It's just like, you know, there's other huge events that's happened that doesn't get mentioned in all the other movies as well, too. I just found it fascinating, like how everybody was hung up on that. I don't want to say everybody, because not everybody, but how a lot of people were hung up on mm-hmm. that little factoid. I was just like, okay.
Right.
And I made a TikTok video about that. I was like, what did you want them to do? Like, how would that incorporate into a story to your satisfaction that doesn't take away from the story that's being told in said movie, you know? So it's
right.
This is probably the best way to do it. But even then, people are just like, well, they just mentioned it. Like, it just seems like no one ever really cares about it, even though it's a weird thing to happen.
Well, and also it's not an Earth or universe ending threat. I mean, in since Eternals came out, we had, let's see, Shang-Chi was before Eternals. So we had Spider-Man No Way Home. They were too busy to talk about it. Mm-hmm. We had Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. They weren't even on this Earth for half of that movie. We've had Thor, again, not on Earth for most of the movie. And then mm-hmm. we've had, She-Hulk and Moon Knight?
Moon Knight and Ms. Marvel.
And Ms. Marvel, yeah.
And Ms. Hawkeye, Marvel. Technically.
Yeah, because it was on, because it
was after Eternals. After
Eternals. But either way, I don't think that they really had a great place to reference it. Because there's always something going on. So at least it was referenced in this, even though it's a blink and you miss it scene. But the whole mm-hmm. reason I want to bring up those articles is because there's a clear Wolverine reference there.
Mm-hmm.
What did it say? Man with claws involved in bar brawl or something like that.
Which I find fascinating.
Man with metal claws. It actually mentioned metal claws.
Yeah, metal claws. Yeah. And I find it fascinating because it's clearly, I don't want to say clearly, but what came to my mind when I saw that was, is it referencing that first scene that we saw Wolverine in X-Men back in 2000?
Yeah, I thought that too.
2001. Yeah. And so now it just makes me wonder, was that intentional? Is it just like a throwaway Easter egg where it's like a one and done type of thing? Or mm-hmm. is that something that, because Feige has said he knows exactly how he's mm-hmm. bringing the mutants and the X-Men into the MCU. So now I'm wondering if this is one of the, you know, many things that they're doing to kind of call out and if somehow the previous movies are actually going to be involved with how they bring them in somehow, you know, not that it's going to be the same actors by any means whatsoever, but it's just find it. I don't know if that's a bigger tie-in necessarily, or it's just like, it's just a call out to, you know, that first movie, but it's not going to play a huge role into how we're bringing them in either. So.
Yeah. And they've already clearly laid seeds for it anyway. I mean, we have Ms. Marvel actually being called out for being a mutant, you know, at the mm-hmm. end of the show. And I'm sure that we're going to get more and more of those little Easter eggs, because one thing that people have been asking is, well, how are they going to bring mutants in? Are they going to say that they were caused by the blip? Are they going to say this? I don't think they're going to do any of that. I honestly believe that the mutants have been slowly developing in the background and trying to stay hidden because they know that people are probably not, they probably had some interactions with people that weren't favorable. And so mm-hmm. I think we're going to find out that they've been around for a little while, maybe not from the very beginning of the MCU, but I think we're going to find out that they've been around for a little while. And I think they're going to keep dropping those hints, maybe a little bigger hints here and there. Even though I don't think that Hulk or She-Hulk are mutants. That's another theory that I saw thrown around, and I don't believe that. But because a genetic mutation occurs does not mean it's the X gene genetic mutation.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know about all that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm getting as tired as Ian, so I'm starting to ramble. I'm just excited for the fact that we're getting these Easter eggs consistently in the MCU. I think that that's something that they have done consistently well from the very beginning, all the way back from Iron Man. The Easter eggs that they've dropped very strategically, very much for people that know what to look for and that understand what the references are. And I think that they're doing a really good job with that. And I'm looking forward to all of it. I think we're going to get a lot of cameos in this show. I think that, you know, we already saw little glimpses of Frogman in the trailers. I can't wait. I'm pretty sure that the guy who showed them the map of the best place to poop is Frogman. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. But I don't know. I'm really excited for this show. I'm two episodes in. I've enjoyed more so than the majority of Ms. Marvel already. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting, because not that I hated Ms. Marvel by any means, but it was very hit or miss for me. And I'm really excited that two episodes in, I'm so ready to see the next episode every time that the credits roll. And the fact that we're getting mid-credits or post-credit scenes in this from the beginning, the best post-credit scene in a Marvel property in a long time in last week. But anyway, that's it. That's mine. Everybody, Ian, say something. You haven't talked for a while.
Do you think that with everything happening and all these characters being introduced and them bringing in like characters that you would never think would be in this universe, do you think we're finally built up enough to where we can get like a Leather Boy?
I knew you were going to say Leather Boy. I knew you were going to bring him back up. I will say, in all honesty, if they were going to bring Leather Boy to the MCU, it would be on this show.
Yeah,
it would absolutely be on this show, just based on the trailers and the silliness that it looks like we're going to get to see throughout this with some of the superhuman activity. I think that this would be the one.
For those of you listening or looking at your screen and thinking, Leather Boy, what is why have I never heard of Leather Boy? That's right. Wait for it. Leather Boy. There he is. Now, if he doesn't show up soon, I will riot.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the show where they're going to take a lot of obscure characters and just kind of do like a one episode with them and all that. And I think it's
confused my camera to do that.
Looking for Leather Boy. Bring
back
go?
Leather Boy.
It's just trying to zoom in on the ball gag somewhere. It's trying to catch it in the frame.
Yeah, and speaking with all these characters, I mean, you both know that I'm a huge Daredevil fan. I'm just really curious if it's just going to be Daredevil or if we're going to see Matt Murdock as well, too, in the courtroom with Jennifer Walters.
I'm really hoping that we do. I'm hoping that I want to see them against each other in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah. The prosecution and defense of Leather Boy.
Well, and I think
imagine that trial.
Yeah. I think it'd be great because Matt Murdock is the serious lawyer that we saw from the Netflix series. Mm-hmm. And I could see She-Hulk, you know, taking more of the comedic approach to kind of.
Right.
Because it'd be even funnier if she's, you know, just wailing joke after joke or just completely botching it as kind of the exact opposite of what Matt Murdock is doing. And assuming that it's the same Matt Murdock from the Daredevil series, because I know that's a lot of, you know, controversies and are these canon and all that. And we don't even know, like, this is technically the same one, or if it's like a one-off universe from the Netflix series as well, too. But I think if it's the same kind of Matt Murdock, I think it'd be really funny to see them in the same courtroom and kind of making arguments that are very different from each other. One's, you know, really serious and the other one is taking cracks at it. So,
well, and then I think it would also be a lot of fun to see if she doesn't know that he's Daredevil, seeing him opposing her in the courtroom and being a mentor role in like some kind of a superheroic thing going on. I think that could be really, really interesting to see them against each other in court, but him realizing that, well, she might need some help understanding, you know, this life of being a vigilante or superhero that she doesn't really want to be.
Right.
But I know that more than anything, you're excited about the suit that we're going to see in this series.
I will say that the screenshots that I've seen with the suit actually looks good.
Right.
I've just never been a fan of the yellow red combo, and I hate it. It just reminds me.
I don't think anybody's
of,
really a fan.
I mean, there's some people who are, you know, like it's the original or whatever, and the nostalgic ones. What, like, whatever, you know, it doesn't make sense for him to wear red and yellow in any kind of universe. I'm kind of curious to see how they, you know, make this work and all that. But it's just, he reminds me too much of like Condiment King from DC Comics. Like, you know, he looks like a mixture of mustard and ketchup.
Would you be spraying ketchup on someone?
Yeah, exactly. So, but with that said, like this combination of yellow, red, they toned down
the
dynamic colors. Yeah. And so it actually makes a lot of sense of like how they did it. Mm-hmm. I'm just really curious to see how they explain, you know, why that suit and everything. Cause someone made a good point that the suit actually looks like the same underlying body of the Netflix show. So now it's like, did he, you know, change it to yellow for some reason, or is this just another call out to the show that they're going to use the same suit and they're going to like update it or whatever, or rewrite
it? Did somebody else paint it because he doesn't know the difference?
Who knows?
Did Deadpool pull a prank on him?
that
you'll never know.
Yeah, that'd be funny if he shows up in the post credit scene the last episode and that's how they introduced
just
Deadpool.
Spray painting Daredevil's helmet. Yeah.
Which, by the way, since we're doing Secret Wars, they need to do Deadpool Secret Wars.
They really do need to do Deadpool Secret Wars. That'd be awesome. I'm excited to see what they do with Deadpool. I don't know, especially because I'm loving the small fourth wall breaks we're getting in the show. I think we're going to start seeing more and more of those. But I think it's going to set up, you know, the idea of breaking the fourth wall in the MCU, which is something that Deadpool is known for, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think that this show is going to go a long way to help that not seem so out of place, because we've never seen it before in the MCU.
Right.
I do. I think you mentioned it at the beginning, Sean. I think this show is going to be setting up and filling in gaps for a lot of things in the MCU going forward. And that, I think, is what Phase 4 has been about. I think I talked about that last week or a couple weeks ago, that every project in the MCU so far has been about setting up a new character or filling out an underutilized character's story. And I think right. that's what this is doing as well. And it's going to do both, obviously, because we're setting up She-Hulk while also filling in the gaps. And I'm really excited for that, because I want to know every small little nuance about this universe. Every time that we learn something new, I eat it up. I love it. I like all the little details. I want to see all of it. I want to watch a courtroom drama where they just spend an entire episode in the courtroom arguing a case. I want to see that. I'm really hopeful for it. So yeah, those are my thoughts on She-Hulk. What'd you guys think about the post-credit scene? Did you like this one?
I don't think it was necessary, but it was funny.
Yeah. I liked her getting onto her dad about messing with the wires of the TV. That was very relatable.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've had to say something like that to my father-in-law. He calls me and asks me tech questions. Like, I'm just going to come over. Don't touch anything. I'll be there in a minute. Just don't touch anything.
Yeah. That's how I am with my in-laws and my parents, which is, I will say, it's really funny, because growing up, I actually talked to Kevin on our show about this before. When we're talking about, you know, growing up with video games and everything, is that my dad was always the one with the technical know-how of how to, you know, connect everything. So it's interesting to see how the roles have flipped. And especially with my father-in-law, he was a computer teacher for like, I think, 15 years for middle school. So he used to know all this technology stuff. And I think, you know, at a certain point, you're just like, you know, it's probably easier just to have somebody who knows this than for me to figure this out. You're just like, somebody else could do this for me. Like, I've learned in this age that I don't have to figure it out on my own anymore. Somebody else could do it for me that I know. So it's just interesting how that's like flipped, and that we're doing this for our parents, and when they used to do it for us all the time. So, I think the post credit scene was fun. I don't think it was as good as the first one.
No, I don't think that one will be beat.
Yeah. But I think I'll say this, that I love post-credit scenes where it gives you a little bit negative, like what's to come and everything like that. I enjoyed the first one. I think this one was funny, but It was like the post credit scene for Hawkeye. As much as I love that show, like I didn't care to watch the musical for that. You know, I know.
Clutching at my pearls.
For me, it's like that could have been a bonus thing that they could have released and not an end credit scene or post credit scene. And so I don't mind them doing this for this because it's early in the series, so you can kind of get away with that. But I'm just hoping that at some point they'll start doing post credit scenes or mid credit scenes and kind of tease what's coming up in the next episode or something along those lines. So
yeah,
but yeah, it was funny. I mean, I could have lived without it. You know, but I laughed and everything, but the first one was definitely much better. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, anybody got anything else to say about She-Hulk before we wrap this up? All right, Sean, you want to plug the show, man? I know you've got a bunch of changes coming very soon.
Yep. So, we are going through some changes where I'm going to be running the show on my own, and Kevin is going to join us as a guest host when he can. And so I've kind of taken the month of August off to do some revamping, but we're going to start back up again. The next episode is going to drop September 6th, which as of right now should be an interview with a man named Danny Quick, who runs his own comic shop. He has his own line of comics called Ace Blade is the main character that he is written for. But he has his own studio and actually has created an escape room based on his superheroes that he's created as well too. So the first episode is going to drop September 6th, and then it's going to be weekly at this point. So we were doing it twice a month, but now I'm going to be doing episodes every week, and you can check that out at our website, thecapsandlife.com, and I'll give you all the places where you can listen to us on podcast, on YouTube. It gives you the list of all the episodes, where you can find us on social media, things like that. But if you want to look us up on social media, if you look up Caption Life, we will be there. So
yeah, and there will be links to captionlife.com in this episode, so make sure you go and check that out. I'm very excited for the show moving forward. It is going to be a lot of fun to check out. Definitely check out the first episode here in just two weeks.
Yep.
That's exciting. All right. And that is our show. Make sure that you are following us on all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, of course, on YouTube. Like I said, again, at the beginning, like, comment, subscribe, ring the notification bell, all the things you're supposed to do. If you're listening on the podcast platform, whatever platform you're on, make sure that you are rating and reviewing the show. That helps us a lot. And if you want to support the show in any other way, you can check out our wonderful, wonderful merch store, which is in the link below as well. So thank you very much. Let us know what you thought about She-Hulk in the comment section, or you can hit us up at the website or on the socials. I'm going to stop rambling. For Ian and Sean, I have been Derek. This has been the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, and we will see you next time.